Everyone, thank you for taking the time and lending your ears to these various conversations. Very excited to share all the guests that I have with you this season. And in order for this season to be a success, I need you guys to help share the word and spread the love of the What Makes You Tick pod. While you're listening, please take a moment to like or subscribe to the podcast wherever you are. And as always, I really appreciate all the help and the support that you guys have given me.
You know, so that's why I'm decided to run across the country, 206 kilometers from Athenry to Denver H. Dublin, leave on the 24th of October, arriving on the 26th, 52 kilometers a day. And the reason I'm doing it is, number one, it will be the 26th of October, the 50th year of my accident, the anniversary of my accident. And number two is, I have committed to trying to raise $250,000 for the NRH Foundation. I'm a good bit off that, so I'm hoping people will get in behind it and support this endeavour, and hopefully we'll get another few pounds in the bank account for the National Rehabilitation Hospital.
Everybody, welcome back to What Makes You Tick, and I am so proud to have Gussie Farrell, Fergus Gussie Farrell, back with me on another episode of What Makes You Tick. Gussie is a regular on the podcast now. We've had so many really, really good conversations over the last couple of seasons, Gussie, and you're going from strength to strength to strength. What people have always said is that your honesty and your openness every time you talk is massively refreshing, and I've no doubt our chat will be something similar today. So listen, welcome back, pal. How have you been?
Oh, great. No, Stephen. Yeah, life is good again, you know, so I can't complain.
Good. Well, we might touch on that in a minute, but I think it's important that we actually delve straight into one of the reasons why we want to have a conversation today, because you are a man who has taken on challenges that life has thrown at you over the last number of years, from severing your spinal cord in an accident at work and getting a 5% chance to walk again, to then a year later walking from Athenry to the National Rehabilitation Hospital, to attempting to row across the Atlantic Ocean. And now you are setting yourself another challenge, which I would love you to talk about and to share with our listeners.
Yeah, Stephen. So I'll just go back to go a few years ago. You know, one of the big turning points in my life was, you know, when I was really, really depressed and really down in life, I figured out that challenges define me, you know, and make me and keep me focused. And but there's one thing that I didn't figure out during that time is what type of challenge, or not so much the type of challenge, but a challenge I've discovered since is a challenge that I'm in control of is huge for me, because I know it's within my boundaries, it's within my will, it's within my means to complete it if it's my challenge. And the things that can, I suppose, scupper that challenge, or I would have foreseen them, because it's a challenge I know I can actually physically complete, you know. So that's why I'm decided to run across the country, 206 kilometers from Athenry to Denner H in Dublin, leaving on the 23rd of October, arriving on the 26th, 52 kilometers per day. And the reason I'm doing it is, number one, will be the 26th of October will be the 50th year of my accident, the anniversary of my accident. And number two is, I have committed to trying to raise $250,000 for the NRH Foundation. I'm a good bit off that, so I'm hoping people will get in behind it and support this endeavour, and hopefully we'll get another few pounds in the bank account for the National Rehabilitation Hospital, because they need it, and they're an amazing organisation.
Well, we'll put all the links in the show notes, and I think that's massively admirable. And I think for anybody who hasn't heard your story, because people need to remember here, is that this is no ordinary human being, right? From my own Vantage point, Gussie, like, you have accomplished Everest of life in terms of controlling and managing your depression, to physically taking on a challenge to learn how to walk again. I think people might not realize how monumental this challenge is. And I listen, you probably think, listen, I can do it, but 5% chance. I remember you telling a story where you were lying in the NRH after severing your spinal cord and you could barely, you can move your big toe. And that was the kind of the sign that I'm going to fight this. I'm going to go after this. Yeah. So is that the type of mindset that you're in now?
Yeah. So look, it's, I'm going to get across this line. So just put a little bit of context into it, right? Okay. So I walked across the country, you know, going back 4 years ago, a year after the accident. And by God, I just got there. But I did. This is slightly different. Even though I tried to row across the country, I've done a lot of training since. The one thing I've never done is I've never actually, up to about 4 weeks ago, I've never actually tried to run any sort of distance since my accident, because it feels so damn strange, because I don't have the sensation in my feet. I don't feel the impact on the road on my feet. I feel them on my knees and my hips. So it's a very weird sensation. And also I don't have proprioception, which means when my feet are airborne, I actually don't know where they are. So
oh, wow.
The reason I've taken this on is, again, I want to show people, like, I've still, as you know yourself, Stephen, I still have huge issues over the failure of the rowing. But I believe that what I need to do now is take on a challenge that is difficult, and a challenge that's in my control, but a challenge that I can do and I can complete. So I can get a sense of accomplishment back. And also, but look, I could say I could run a marathon tomorrow and do it, but I don't think that's difficult enough. So I want to put myself through pressure. I want to put myself through pain. I want to put myself into doubt. You know, I want to do all those things. But also, why I'm doing that is I want to show people that, do you know something? If there's something worth doing, you can do it. And this is something that's worth doing for numerous reasons. Number one, raising money for the NRH to help me reset my own mindset, and to celebrate my anniversary as well of the accident, you know. And I'm celebrating that the anniversary of my accident more as much for myself as it is for the people who have helped me along the way, you know, to say, look, thank you very bloody much for absolutely everything you've done for me, because it's impossible to go around and thank those people. So this is just saying, hey, here you go. This is what I'm doing now. And thank you, you know.
So tell me this. You mentioned there that you're doing it for yourself, and that you find that when you put yourself through challenge, that it's something that you need to do. Why? Like, what's the reason behind that? Like, because so a lot of people take an easy life, right? And they try and not worry about challenge, or not go into a point where they have, I suppose, where they get to a point where they're in conflict or in turmoil. They try to kind of go through life in as easy as possible, but you're searching for pain.
Yeah.
You're searching for a dark, like I like something that will put you to the edge of your ability. Why?
Okay. So I've had two lives, really, you know. I've had the life up to the point where, you know, I had my accident, which I was in that zone. I was in the zone of, you know, just plodding through life, taking the easy options, eating the junk food, not exercising, you know, and, you know, not realizing kind of what sort of person I was becoming. And then obviously, as I said, my accident was a huge turning point in my life. And I discovered that, you know, there's so much more to life. And that accident helped me to get to be a fitter person, a healthier person, I believe a better person, you know. And why am I doing more and more challenges? Because I find it just keeps me focused, keeps me wanting to stay fit. I don't ever want to let myself into that. I never want to get back into that comfort zone, ever. And I'm afraid to let myself back into that comfort zone. because if I get back into that comfort zone, I don't know how I'm going to react. I don't know how easy I get myself out of it. So having these challenges in front of you, or having these challenges in front of you, really sharpens the mind and gets you up off your bum on the days when you're feeling lazy or you're feeling lethargic. You know, when you have that challenge and you put it out there, there's no hiding.
Well, that's I actually agree with you to a point. I think when you tell people that you're going to do something, there's an accountability to it, right? Yeah. That you have to then man up, or sorry, in the more modern world, but I think you have to become a bit more understanding or reflective of your actions, right? So
yeah,
when you tell somebody you're going to do something, then that's on you, right? It's a social contract that you have with yourself then going, well, I've said it now.
Exactly.
And I don't want anybody to think I can't do it. So yeah. But in doing this, what do you think you're going to achieve yourself when you complete this?
There's two big things that I want to achieve. One is I need a reset. I'm still...
From what?
Just that sense of, I don't know why, it still hangs over me. That sense of failure or lack of accomplishment is really affecting me. And I just believe that this reset of being able to accomplish something that is difficult and that not everybody will or can do will help me get over that sense of failure. By giving me a sense of accomplishment by doing it and by raising money for the NRH at the same time, I believe it just will reset where my mind and is at the moment. So it's nearly like a shot into the dark, really. You know, I've said, right, I'm going to do this. It's already helped me a lot, you know, by just going out and saying I'm doing it, because I'm back training nice and hard. I'm focused on it every evening rather than sitting home and doing nothing. I'm working on the project. So yeah, that's the main reason, you know. It's just a reset and just give me that sense of accomplishment again that I had after my walk. I had a huge sense of accomplishment, you know, after that walk and after doing the row with the Aran Islands with Damien and all the training. And then I had a huge sense of accomplishment going out rowing. And then when I came back off that boat, you know, because we had told the whole world, you know, there was that sense of failure, which I thought I was over many times, but it just kept creeping back. And that's that. I think that's the biggest reason for me. That's my personal reason.
Tell me, that sense of failure and that piece that's hanging over you. Like when we spoke before, and I remember saying to you, like, have you ever been like, when are you kind to yourself, right? And that was one of the biggest things that I think we took from that conversation, is that there was a bit of a holy shit, I'm actually not so kind to myself. Like if it was anybody else and you were watching them and they had gone through the same thing that you had gone through, like, do you think they would have failed, or would you have said fair play to you for giving it a lash and giving it a shot? Like, how would you have treated that person?
Yeah, of course. Like, I would have treated that person with, you know, utmost respect, and like, I would have treated that person like he was like a hero, you know what I mean, to do what they did. But that's not the way how the mind works, you know.
Our
minds are different, so it's just something that is just nagging away at me all the bloody time. You know, it's not that it's there all the time. So if something like for argument's sake, okay, I had argue with my sister, I might be over something silly, but it made me feel like, oh my god, I'm here now and I can't even have a proper relationship with my sister because there's this sense of, you know, not being good enough.
Okay.
So failure tends to lead you to feeling you're not good enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it will creep in absolutely everywhere. For argument's sake, say I'm trying to learn a language, you know, and I'm no good with languages, but I'm doing my damnedest. But like, I go and try and speak it, and then, you know, I wouldn't be understanding it, and I'd be here going, it's just sense of not being good enough to be able to learn a language. It's nagging away at all the time. Yeah. Or if you did something like, for argument's sake, say now you did relation to work and you're doing up some figures and you miscalculated by a small fraction, you'd be here going, Jesus, don't tell me I'm not good enough to just do simple math. Do you know, it was just always in the background. When something little would happen, it would make it bigger.
Okay, interesting. Because I'm a massive advocate of failing, right? I'm a massive advocate of, especially in business and in life, right? Because like in relationships, had many failed relationships. In business, failed to do certain projects or failed to get certain things over the line, failed to win pitches. But in each failure, it's actually helped me become better and more rounded and give me, I suppose, the confidence to do the job better the next time, right? So yeah. Do you allow yourself to fail? Do you accept when you fail?
I have to accept it, yeah. I don't like it, but I have to accept it because a lot of things you're failing is, you know, there's repercussions to it, you know? So those repercussions don't let you, you know, forget about your failures, you know what I mean?
Okay.
I would try and, okay, so like that, Stephen, the fear of failure, if you had that always gripping you, you're not going to try stuff. You're not going to do stuff. You're going to...
Yeah, it paralyzes you. It paralyzes you. It does,
yeah. A little bit paralyzes you. And
excuse me for saying that now, considering the history you had.
I didn't even think of that. so it does paralyze you, that fear of failure. So even just for me to set the challenge, you know, has helped me get out of that sense of failure. And now me going out training and sitting, getting my targets and all that type of stuff, it's given me a sense of satisfaction. It's given me a sense of... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And hopefully at the end of it. And again, it's a project, it's a challenge that's doable. You know, I'm gonna be in my own bed every night, not my own bed, but a hotel bed every night. I'm gonna have ice baths when I'm finished running. I'm gonna have, you know, I'll have all that stuff geared up, and I'm gonna have good food, you know. There's no way in sheer that I'm not gonna complete this challenge.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of getting it done.
I think this challenge is probably a step in the right direction for you to manage the aftermath of the row, and also to prove to yourself that when you own something and when you put when the challenge is yours and yours alone, nothing will stop you.
Exactly.
Tell me this: what are your relationships like now? Since we spoke, because the last time we spoke, you were angry, you were pissed off, and you were annoyed with life. you were in a bit of a shitty old place. And since then, like you look brighter, like you look fitter, you look like you've lost a bit of weight, like you look like you look energized, you know.
Okay, so my relationship with kids is fantastic, absolutely fantastic. Relationship with parents is very, very good. Sister's good. There's another one or two relationships that aren't so good, which probably I put... So my big thing is when I put absolutely everything into everything, you know? I don't do things half-heartedly, you know? And when I don't see that coming back, I feel hard done by. And again, because of this, again, sense of failure or not being good enough, when I give everything and I'm not getting it back, it makes me feel like I'm not good enough because my everything isn't getting everything back. Do you get me? So my everything is not worth that back to me. So there's one or two relationships there that it has been tricky, but it's all my own, like genuinely, I'm not say, but it is down to how I perceive things, you know.
Yeah,
and it's difficult for me to. It has been difficult for me to, you know, how to say it. It's difficult for me to, take myself out of that zone and realize what it is. You know.
Yeah, I remember. I'm a big fan of Marissa Peers and a few other relationship experts and. Like I would listen to them and try and just kind of get a perspective on things, you know. And one of the things they said is the expectation of love or the expectation of others. And that when we have that expectation that when we're doing something and they're not doing at the same level, then, well, they obviously don't care enough or they don't love enough, but maybe that's just the way they love and the way they care. So for example, I would be a big, big fan of somebody giving me a pat on the back, telling me I'm doing okay, right? Or that you're doing a good job. Now, sometimes I get it and sometimes I don't. And that's just me having to kind of just adapt to it, because it doesn't mean that the person doesn't care for me any less or any more than they do. It's just their way of showing things. And if I have an expectation of that's how love is, or that's how somebody who thinks I'm doing well, that's what they need to do, I'll always be disappointed. So it's trying to balance it out of going, okay, I got the pat on the back there on Friday, but I'm not getting it next week, you know? So do you know what I mean? So do you think that maybe sometimes your expectations on how people should be with you doesn't live up to what you expect to give yourself?
Exactly. I found out on myself, like, you know, not so long ago, you know, say for our sake, say, you know, you do something just silly in a relationship and you might make your partner upset. And, you know, I'd be a person who, you know, I was always under this, don't ever go to bed with an argument, you know, don't ever go to bed with an argument. So I would be hell bent on talk about what just happened and not to go to bed with it, where herself at the time would be, no, I don't want to talk about it. So I was here going to bed, my head fried. Why don't you want to talk about it? And she would go, no, I don't want to talk about it. Because again, we deal with it in different ways.
Yeah.
It's understanding that, you know.
I remember when something like that happened, and what happened to me was similar like that, a little bit of an argument or something. And it was like, listen, I don't want to talk about it now. I love you, right? But I don't want to talk about this right now. So we'll deal with it in the morning. But I'm just letting you know that I love you. So good night.
And then
that kind of put me in my box a little bit. You know, I was like, okay. we'll figure it out. By the time you wake up, you're so well diffused. By that stage, you kind of go, forget about it.
Exactly.
Sometimes with the red mist, you never actually come to any kind of arrangement or agreement.
No, that's for sure. And sure, if there's two red mists, like, you know, I said, if you have a red mist and the other person's red mist as well, keep going back and back and back. You did this, you did that, you did this, you did that.
Tell me this, right? You said your relationship with your kids are great. What have you learned from your kids most over the last kind of 12 months that that has kind of stood out to you?
What have I learned from my kids the most? Again, you always get the good questions, do you, devil? What have I learned most from my kids? That they just want to be with you. Doesn't matter what you're doing. They just want to be with you, and and that's it.
Is there something there about time and about the time we have left? You know, because people who love you just want to spend time with you.
And
like I'm very, very fortunate that my parents are still alive, and. Listen, my old man has been in and out of health issues for years. My mum is a Trojan, and but like you're always kind of going, okay, how many times am I going to see them now this year? You know, how many times are we going to go for lunch and all that stuff? And obviously those times will run out, but I think the ones who really love you and really care for you want your time. And do you see that with your kids?
They just want to be around you. They don't need to be doing these amazing things with you. They just want to be there. They're just like my young lad, my Bradley, he's 10 years of age, and like all he wants to do, because I taught him how to make a cup of tea, you know, and all he wants to do now is make me tea and toast, you know. And then Phelan, who is my youngest boy, he's 5. Now he can actually go in and start up a coach. He's only 5 years of age. Most bloody adults can't do this. But all he wants to do now, he is a handful. Man, he is a handful, because he just does not stop from morning. He gets up until he goes to bed. But all he wants to do is do things with you, do things for help you. And then Amy is 12 years of age. You know, she's getting into that period of her life. But at the same time, she loves having a chat, you know? Yeah. And I treasure that because, you know, as you said, like, once you have a girl, you'll always have a best friend. Like, and there's no truer saying than that. I love nothing more than my little chats with her. Now, half the time she begins telling me, like, you know, I'm stupid, I know nothing. If I tell her to open the door this way, she'll tell me, no, I'll open the other way. Do you know? But we've all done it, so I'm laughing at it. I did it to my parents. I'm sure you did it to your parents.
Yeah, still do it to them.
And I'm just laughing at it, you know what I mean? So, but like, as I said, like, they just want to be around you and happy. But, you know, be around you when you're being a good person as well is very, very important for them, you know?
What then, as we spoke about relationships and your kids and stuff, like, what are the kind of the key traits in your life that you deem to be the important elements of a relationship in your life? What are the kind of the key characteristics that, like, people come and go in their lives, right? That's fine, no problem. But what are the characteristics of those who stay?
That I give to them, is it?
Well, just that. Like the solid, they could be relationships, they could be friendships, they could be anything, but what are the kind of the characteristics of the ones that seem to succeed in your life?
Oh, Jesus. That's a deep one.
You know me now.
So,
I suppose, let's put it to you this way. What do you look at in somebody that you admire? Say I want them in my life, be it a friendship or a relationship.
Yeah, okay. That's so. What do I admire in people? I think it's just somebody who I know this is going to sound very, very, you know, simple, but just I love people who love life, you know, who are not pessimistic but optimistic. Now, I know there's people out there who are pessimistic, but they're only pessimistic for having a bit of crack. You know what I mean? As in, that's their attitude. You know, as in, but they're not actually pessimistic people, but you know what I mean? They criticize everything to have a laugh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I think, for me, I think it's just people who really, really want to make the most of their life. You know, make the most of the now and make the most of what's presented to them rather than complaining about it, you know? My dad's a big person like that, you know? Very, very, very good at that. So he is.
Take life, whatever way it throws at you. It's funny. I read a book called Choose Happiness. It's by a fella called Mo Gaudet. And Mo, when Mo had two kids, right? And at 21, his only son at 21 went into hospital for a kidney operation and never came out, right? And he was devastated, absolutely devastated. And Mo was one of these guys who was like the top guy in Google X. He was like one of the head innovator fellas, and he had more money than sense, and he had all the materialistic things, and everything that he wanted, he got. And it gave him a sense of happiness in that moment, but it was only fleeting because he could get whatever he wanted. But the thing that made him happiest most were his kids, right? Yeah. He lost his kid at 21. And one of the things that he always said that he was devastated, but within that devastation, he had an opportunity to either to make a choice, and he could choose to either be miserable for the rest of his life and feel that pain and let that pain consume him, or he could actually focus on the 21 years that he had with his lovely child and share the happiness that his child was trying to share with the rest of the world. And in that moment, he decided to choose happiness and he decided to spread the story of his kid as well as spreading happiness around. And one of the areas that he always said is that, listen, it's important to feel feelings and to feel the sadness and the worries and the stresses and the strains and stuff. But there comes a point where you get to choose whether you want to sit in that or you want to choose to get out of it and to move on with it. And I think those people who actually have that wherewithal or that vision to say, right, I can dwell in this sadness, or I can choose to take on something else. They're like, I really do admire those people, and I admire the strength that they have. And I see that in you, where you're choosing to take on a new challenge. You don't have to. You don't have to do any of it. But you're choosing to do it because you believe that by doing this and by achieving this, that it'll give you that line in the sand of the last 18 months or so.
Yeah.
To take on the rest of life. Am I right in saying exactly. that?
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head, yeah. So you have. And like, there's another big aspect to it. Like, I remember like how proud my kids were of me taking on. Well, they'd be very proud of me anyways, but very proud of, you know, me taking on the challenge and the role and whatnot. But I could see I told my young lady, like 3 weeks ago, sorry, before I told anybody, and I told him, Bradley, don't tell anybody. And he came within doing little jogs with me. Now, I mean very little jogs, like maybe 500 meters, you know, up and down the Bory, just to do the training with me, you know, and you could see he's so, how to say, proud and happy that I'm taking on this challenge again. So for me, it's that, making them very proud of me, and also, again, showing them that, hey, look, guys, if you want to do something, you know, just get up off your backside. It's within you. Go out and do it. But don't wait for somebody to do it for you.
I love that. You know, I think that's huge. And like this, what you're instilling in them now at the moment as well is that you're going to get setbacks in life. Things aren't going to work out the way you hoped or planned. But you get up off your arse and you go again. And you never give up. I think that's the thing, is never, ever, ever give up. You just got to keep fighting. And don't, like, so to that point, Gussie, like, what does life mean to you now? Like, what is your definition of your life?
My definition of my life? Oh, Jesus, my definition of my life. I think it's getting knocked down again. Shouldn't stop you from getting back up. And keep going, keep going, keep going. Perseverance is perseverance is everything. Having good character. I'm struggling with that answer, but you know, I think you know where I'm going with that. We all like to be the Rolls Royces of this world, you know, but 99.9% of us aren't. And it's okay to be the 99.9%. Mm-hmm. It's the 99.9% that actually drives this world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you should be very, 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 very proud of everything you do if you do it to your best.
But I think one of the things that you're talking, and you've mentioned a number of times between your kids and between yourself, is pride, and to live with pride and to actually do things that you're proud of. And I think you can, if people did that across all forms of life, and what I mean by all forms is that whether it's on social media, whether it's in a boardroom, whether it's at home, if you're proud of what you're doing, then you can do there's little more that you can do. But the other thing I think that you're kind of alluding to there is like, there's an honesty in your hard work, and there's an honesty in trying and giving life a lash, because like, fuck me, man, there's so many things that can go wrong, and we can worry and dwell and build up all this anxiety about what can go wrong. And I remember I was saying to you before we came on was that I did the Wim Hof method in Liscannor. Before I went down there, I was worried about what I didn't have instead of focusing on what I do have and the things that are around me that are so, so important. My relationship, my family, like I took control of my job, and I'm having a go at that now and trying to be as good as I can be in that. And it's scary. I'll tell you one thing, it is scary. And there's times where I'm free, like I'm free falling, right? But I have an unbelievable support structure. I have people who believe in me, and there's a fear of letting them down that I don't want to do. So I get what you're doing. I get what you're trying to achieve. While mine mightn't be as a physical, there's definitely a connection between what you're doing and what people do with their everyday lives, you know?
Yeah. So I've often said it, challenge, like people hear the word challenge, they nearly always think of a physical challenge. A challenge can be anything. It can be mind, emotional, it can be physical, it can be, you know, it can be so many different things. Like you said about challenging yourself to go out on your own. Like that is one of the most scariest things you can do because you lose all sense of security.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we all crave in life, security, you know? And to go out on your own and do what you're doing, like that is one of the hardest things to do in life, you know, because but you can do it because you have the network, support network around you. So imagine if you didn't have that great support network around you, how much more fearful it would be.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because there was a big lack of self-belief at one stage for me personally was because you're going from a big corporate entity to yourself, right? So it's easy to go and ask for the money when you've got a big brand behind you, but when it's yourself, then it's like, and there's a lack of self-belief. But that self-belief comes from putting yourself into positions, driving yourself, having those conversations with people, and then trying to create the opportunities to come from that. And like you, I love having a conversation. I'm just sorry we never have these conversations over pints because you imagine we'd be taking over the world. but I do.
Pints as well.
but I do genuinely admire the courage you have to get back up again. As you said, you got knocked down, but you're now taking another step in the right direction, and you're moving forward. You're making progress. While this is a physical challenge, it is a mental challenge for you as well. And I presume you're visualizing the days. Are you going through, are you doing any visualization at the moment?
Just while I'm running, I'm visualizing, you know. Okay. So during the days, wherever else, I'm not really visualizing. But when I actually train, I actually visualize it, all right, you know. Mm. What people don't realize, so number one is I only started about 4 weeks ago doing any sort of long distance. I started off with a 2K, went up to 3K, then up to 6K, then I did 10K, 12K, 15K. And then I got that Connor O'Keefe involved. He was like, hold on now, you're running in less than a month's time. We don't want to overload you. This is what you have to do. So he's actually brought down the numbers that I have to do prior to it and increased them slightly before I do it. Also, why it's going to be very painful for me is, and one is I had a hip resurfacement done, I suppose it's 8 or 9 years ago, and that's on the way out. So it is. I've already really decked that the last 2 weeks. It's getting very painful, but that's okay. And then my right hip, when I got the left hip done, I was told I need to get the right hip done, you know, within a few years of it. But obviously the accident happened, blah, 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 so I didn't put it through as much work as it needs to do, but that's beginning to give me a bit of grief as well. So I'm going to run down the road with two dodgy hips.
Will you need to take a cortisol injection or something beforehand?
Yeah, well, look, as I said, I've a lot of painkillers for my nerve pain and for all the other stuff. So a lot of that will, because I have this thing called gabapentin, which is numbs my nerve pain, but when the nerve numbs the nerve pain, it numbs
all the nerves, everything.
When my hip is on fire, it's really on fire. Okay. Do you get me? Because it hides a lot of it. But yeah. I could be selling Oxynorm and OxyContin and all these things because I have a load of them. Like I have. When I get out of the NRH, like, you know, I was given the prescription. I've never, ever been told never to stop taking a lot of the drugs. And I did. I've stopped taking an awful lot, but never once has a doctor come to say, hey, maybe you look at reducing them. But I knew I had to reduce them myself because they were absolutely frying my head when I got out. You know, so eventually got myself off them. But I still have an awful store of Oxynorm, so of all that stuff. But Nurofen Plus is just as good because that will help with the swelling.
So 23rd to the 26th, 4 days, 52 kilometers a day, you're going to run from Athenry to the National Rehabilitation Hospital there in Dunleary. What do you need from people to help you achieve your goal financially? Because I know you want to raise, what do you say, 250,000 for the National Rehabilitation Hospital.
Yeah. So thankfully with Damien's crossing, that got that up to, so we're about 110,000 now altogether.
Okay.
But all I'm looking at doing is if I got to 10,000 on this, that would be amazing news. Yeah. So I think I'll get there because I have a lead sponsor on board who's going to sponsor the 4 days, but which I can't mention yet because not fully signed, but almost there. I know they'll do it, but just we haven't got a chance to talk.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking for a day sponsor for each day. And then I'm hoping that people who join me on the run, so for example, say 20 people join me throughout the first day, I'm asking anybody who joins me to raise 100 euro. Just say, hey, you raise 100 euro through whatever means, I don't mind how you do it. But that's 100 euro then goes towards the NRH, and then I'll have the I Donate page, which the NRH are setting up right now at this moment in time. And then there are the avenues, but I still need some help with the logistics, but I'm getting there, because I need somebody to drive safety cars for some of those days, food, hotels, and things like that, because I don't want to have any costs be away from the fundraising.
Of course. Well, listen, what we'll do is we'll put up all those links in the show notes. And if there's anybody listening who wishes to get involved, like send me a DM or DM the toughest trek on Instagram and get in touch with Gussie and reach out to him and let him know that you're there to help. Because I think, Gussie, every time I talk to you, I learn something new. And the fact that you have been knocked down and the fact that you keep coming back for more and the fact that you keep fighting is a testament to you. And it's definitely something that your kids, I've no doubt, are super proud of, because these influential years, they'll remember all this hard work that you have done to prove to yourself and to the world that you can take on all these challenges and that you can actually... You are the person that you think you are, Gussie. Whether you have challenges or not, you're a super, super human. So I think this for me is just another showcase of how tough you really, really are. And as always, you've got a friend in the pod here, but like I'd love to join you at some point along those 4 days as well. So we'll link up. And as hopefully my body will be able to keep up with you. I might do the walking part with you.
by day two, I'll probably be walking off.
Listen, I'll definitely join you along the way, and we'll celebrate and we'll push on and we'll hopefully get you over the line. I've no doubt we will anyway.
Well, what we'll definitely do, Stephen, is we'll have a pint on the 26th.
Deal. Okay, deal. Well, I'll get the final 100 yards. But no, come here. I like let the world know if there's anything else or where they can get in touch with you to reach out. What should they do?
Yeah, just DM me at the toughest trek. That is the best sure way that I'll get your message. I'm always on that. So yeah, if you need me, DM me. If you can support us in any way, shape, or form, the toughest trek. On Instagram.
Perfect. And when you get that link, I'll stick it all in the show notes. And listen, Gussie, this is the first of many challenges, and I wish you the best, pal, as you reset and you refocus and you take on the rest of your life. It's going to be an exciting one, that's for sure.
Thanks, Stephen. Really appreciate it.
Once again, thank you for joining me on season 4 and taking part in this journey where we talk to people like you and me about what motivates them, what inspires them, and ultimately what makes them tick. I've learned so much from the various conversations I've had, and I hope you can take something from this that you can apply to your life. That's why this podcast has been created. I'm very proud of it, and I'm very thankful for everybody who's joined me so far. Thank you all for listening.